Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Monday, December 16, 2024. Many South Sudanese say they don't trust banks operating in their country.
Where is the money? Where has the money gone? It is mine, but you're not giving.
And South Sudan's official with the HIV Commission says the disease is spreading in remote parts of the country.
Because awareness total is not there. Well, those people, they're ignorant about HIV. Even Meridi, there's proper awareness. And Mudra West total, if it tested somebody positive for that issue, this become difficult for us.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese do not trust banks with their money, despite an order from the central bank to end limits on cash withdrawals. Commercial banks and the Bank of South Sudan say creating awareness on the importance of having a bank account is needed to restore the lost hope and trust. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi reports from Juba.
The banking sector in South Sudan is struggling because many South Sudanese think opening an account in the bank is a waste of time. Many across South Sudan prefer to keep their money at home instead of opening an account in the bank. There are very few local financial institutions in the 10 states and the 3 administrative areas of South Sudan. Inyani Moses is a businessman in Juba who says the 2016 conflict destroyed his savings in a bank.
When this crisis arises, I realize at the end of the day, I lost all my money. Why? Because when I go to the bank and I had wanted to withdraw, for pounds we don't have a problem. But for US account, because sometimes we do international kind of business, we find it so challenging because you only see the figure. But when you want to withdraw, they tell you they don't have hard current. And then you begin wondering, where is the money? Where has the money gone? It is mine, but you're not giving.
Ladu Emmanuel, a businessman selling electronics at Custom Market, says he doesn't have a bank account and prefers keeping his money in his house.
Can't really keep my money in the bank because with these current inflations, you know, the pound is really weak against the dollar. So the moment you actually keep your money within the bank, by the moment you withdraw it, it has actually lost the value. So that's the reason I can't really keep my money in the bank. That's why I decided just to keep it just inside my house. I really feel it is actually safe while under my bed.
Majog Nicodemo Aro, the Director for Communications and Public Relations at the Bank of South Sudan, says they are strengthening the working relationship between commercial banks and their clients.
To further strengthen public confidence in the banking system, the central bank has resolved to encourage commercial banks to offer interest in saving accounts. This initiative aims to incentivize customers to deposit more money into their saving accounts.
The Bank of South Sudan is the central bank of the country and is responsible for issuing the South Sudan pound. It is government-owned but operates independently to promote price stability and economic growth. Many foreign banks operate in South Sudan's capital, Juba, including the Commercial Bank of Ethiopia, Ecobank, Equity Bank, Kenya Commercial Bank, and the Qatar National Bank. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
The HIV/AIDS Commission in South Sudan's Western Equatoria State has expressed concern over what it calls lack of awareness about HIV/AIDS. Which it says has led to an increased rate in infection across the state. Officials say the prevalence of the virus has increased in western counties compared to last year. Matia Samuel Timoteo reports for VOA from Yambio.
Western Equatoria State has a higher percentage of HIV cases compared to other states in South Sudan. Health experts estimate that HIV prevalence in antenatal clinics across the 10 states stood at 7.2%. A review of HIV data by officials in South Sudan suggests a consistently higher prevalence in Western Equatoria State than in other states. Monica Andrew, the acting chairperson of Western Western Equatoria State's HIV and AIDS Commission says the number of HIV cases is alarming in Mvolo, Greater Mundri, and Maridi counties. She blames ignorance among citizens about the disease, which she says could explain the spike in HIV and AIDS cases in Western Equatoria. Andrew is calling for the World Health Organization's intervention to slow the spread of the deadly disease in the state.
Because awareness total is not there. Well, those people, they're ignorant about HIV. Even Meridi, there's proper awareness. And Mundra West total, if it tested somebody positive, for that issue, it has become difficult for us, or Minister of Health, or World Health Organization, to support us to fight the epidemic of HIV in South Sudan, particularly Western Equatoria. Western Equatoria, it needs more awareness. I ask the World Health Organization or the partners in Western Equatoria to support us more with awareness. Take the awareness. It's not only in the state, capital state. You need to go down in the county, in the Payam, to the village.
Andrew says the State HIV Commission, the State Ministry of Health, and implementing partners are developing strategies on how to address the spread of HIV and AIDS in the state. Samuel Timotheo Bandasi, HIV and AIDS and Tuberculosis Coordinator in the state's Ministry of Health, says HIV prevalence in the state is 6.5% according to a 2023 survey carried out by IntraHealth Organization.
The prevalence of HIV in the state, according to the assessment, is that Western Equatoria, from the highest that used to be 7.2 previous ANC Sentinel surveillance, which was conducted. Another one was conducted in 2023. I took from one of the partners, IntraHealth, who is able to reveal those data. They told us we are at 5.6. This is a result of ANC Sentinel surveillance conducted in 2003. So another one of recently has been conducted, but yet it's under process for it to be out, for result to be out.
Michael Waure lives with HIV and AIDS. Waure stresses the need for men to go to clinics for HIV and AIDS test in order to know their HIV status. He says some men ignore HIV and AIDS testing facilities in Yambio County and only send their wives to get tested.
Since 2006 up to today, I'm now 21 years on the drug. I'm married. I have two women. And I've seen six children, three ladies, three boys. I'm living okay. I'm open. I'm not hiding myself. There are so many benefits when you are open, like me. When you are open, you will be living free. Even your drug, you will be taking your drug among people. Even you will be expressing yourself among people. And your family will be strong.
Waure says people living with HIV and AIDS do not have to hide from the public. Western Equatoria State resident Cecilia Andrew was put on HIV and AIDS drugs in 2008. She encourages people to accept their status who test positive for HIV and says they should be advocates for creating awareness about the disease.
I started taking my drugs in 2008. I have not fallen sick, not for once. I'm very fine, producing my children very healthy. And that is why I'm saying that go for HIV test when you are still very strong before you fall sick. It does not mean your life is finished when you have the virus. Someone's life is in God's hand. You need to calm down and follow what the doctors are telling you. When you get a man, be open. Tell the man you are on your drug. If he is also on his drug, if he accepts you, it's fine, but if not, allow him to look for another woman.
World Health Organization officials in the Western Equatoria State capital Yambio declined to comment on the HIV and AIDS prevalence in the state, saying they are not mandated to speak to the media. Earlier this month, the U.S. government announced it would donate $42 million to support South Sudan's fight against HIV and and AIDS. The funds will be dispensed towards the treatment and prevention of the virus. The U.S. has encouraged the transitional government of national unity to use public funds to strengthen the country's health system. On World AIDS Day, December 1st, the U.S. Embassy in Juba said thousands of people living with HIV in South Sudan, with their families and communities bearing the burden of the disease. For VOA News, I am Matthias Samuel Timatio, reporting from Western Equatorial State Capital, Yambio.
Voters were busy across the globe in 2024, and more than a dozen countries in Africa were among those staging presidential, parliamentary, or local elections, while some long-time dominant ruling parties retained power in parts of Africa. Incumbents suffered crushing defeats in others. VOA Nairobi bureau chief Mariama Diallo, who covered a number of elections, looks into how democracy fared this year on the continent.
Some of the election results this year in Africa were expected, and others were surprising. In Senegal, for example, election uncertainty turned into a historic accomplishment as opposition leader Bassirou Diomaye Faye was elected, and at 44 years old, he became Africa's youngest president. His election victory came after a failed attempt by outgoing president Macky Sall to postpone the election process, creating a brief political crisis in the country. Analyst Teddy Kabiruka says lessons can be learned in the Senegal case.
It's really interesting, a very educative scenario for people who are learning democracy.
In Ghana, after serving only one term about a decade ago, John Mahama made a stunning comeback in 2024 and beat the country's vice president and ruling party candidate, Mahamudu Bawumia.
This mandate represents many things.
Analysts, including Kwame Asa Asante, told VOA that many voters in Ghana were thinking about the economy and their families' financial situations when they cast their ballots.
Because it's a bread and butter issue. Anytime, we've seen time and again that anytime you have a very difficult economy, campaigns become difficult for the government of the day.
Mahama vows to improve an economy which is slowly recovering from a $30 billion external debt default in 2022.
I, Juma Gideon Boko, do swear.
Botswana ushered in a new era by electing a leader from the opposition for the first time in nearly 60 years, following decades of rule by one party. Unlike Botswana, Mozambique's Frelimo party won again after nearly 50 years in power. Results were immediately rejected by opposition leader Venancio Mondlane, who came in second place, triggering violent protests in the southern African country. American University's Kweku Nwama hopes Frelimo's Daniel Chapo can extend an olive branch to the opposition to avoid a prolonged conflict in Mozambique.
When you win, you have a responsibility to unite a country. And so hopefully he's able to do that. We don't need another African country going down in flames.
Similarly, Namibia's ruling party SWAPO retained power after many decades of governance, but made history by electing its first female president, Netumbo Nandi Ndaitwa. Her main challenger, however, called the elections deeply flawed after multiple examples of election day technical difficulties and ballot paper shortages were documented. In Rwanda, longtime leader Paul Kagame won almost 100% of the vote, a suspicious landslide victory, according to some analysts. A suspicious landslide victory, according to Strathmore University's professor Edgar Githua.
If you have a vote where 98% of the population vote for one candidate, that is a red flag.
While Kagame's critics say he has overstayed his place in power, others say he's done a lot for the country. Others say he's done a lot for the country, including Kabiruka.
The achievement is tangible. You can see it.
In South Africa, the African National Congress in power for 30 years failed to win the election with an outright majority, forcing it for the first time to form a coalition government. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, China trains African journalists on free press, a rare commodity in China. Find out more after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The Chinese embassy in Kenya has begun training Kenyan journalists to, they say, promote professionalism and integrity. But press advocates say the initiative is ironic as China falls close to the bottom of the 2024 press freedom ranking. For VOA News, Victoria Munga has the details.
Kenya news anchor and reporter Alan Aoko is one of dozens of reporters and editors at the state-run Kenyan Broadcasting Corporation who recently participated in a Chinese embassy-sponsored media course. The course touched on a range of journalistic topics.
It was very critical for me to understand the kind of tools that we should be using in artificial intelligence and technology transfers and, you know, what we'll use in a daily basis as me, as a reporter, using those tools to disseminate the news. It was important to me to understand the details.
Some 70 journalists participated in the training. Speaking at the opening of the training session, the Chinese embassy's deputy ambassador to Kenya, Zhang Shishong, talked about the importance of the role of journalism in a nation.
Journalists and reporters, you are the core of media and also the key factors in the success of media in convening the information and shaping perceptions and even leading a country or nation into a correct direction.
Studies by independent journalist advocacy groups have documented how China uses such partnerships to try to foster more positive coverage, including via press junkets, sponsorship, and so-called career development opportunities to nurture better media relations. It has also offered tightly controlled press trips to Xinjiang to try to counter investigative reportings that has exposed its mass detentions and abuses in the region. As the world's leading jailer of journalists, China is considered one of the most censored countries in the world, using a combination of censorship, surveillance, and legal threats to prevent free expression. The country ranks 172 out of 180 on the Press Freedom Index, where one shows the best media environment. Alexandra Bilakowska works for Reporters Without Borders, which compiles the index.
Inside of the country, the regime is conducting full-scale campaign against any independent voices, which is also independent journalists. Within the past 10 years, because in the past we could see some space for the independent journalism in China, the investigation journalists have almost died out.
Due to limited resources, the Kenyan National Broadcaster Editor-in-Chief Simon Maina tells VOA that accepting help from China may be inevitable. But Maina says his newsroom's editorial decisions are free from China's influence.
The sponsorship they have given to us does not interfere with the editorial policy. Our editorial policy still stands. So it has nothing to do with how they operate in their country. Our standards and our editorial policy still stand.
A 2021 report by the International Federation of Journalists finds that Beijing's strategy is to target journalists in developing countries such as in Africa, where it has deep financial interests. The report further shows that 3/4 of African respondents said they viewed cooperation with Chinese entities as positive, especially where there's not enough media infrastructure. Kenyan foreign policy professor Noah Midamba says even with Beijing's efforts and investments in Africa, the continent's mass media is still aligned with the West because of the language barrier with China.
What is lagging, you know, for the Chinese is their information is not penetrating to the people in the street, the people in the rural area, and the most populous in Africa. South Africa don't understand Chinese up to now.
At the same time, what has made the headlines in Kenya's participation in China's global infrastructure and investment foreign policy project called Belt and Road Initiative, a partnership many economists say that has led the country into a debt trap. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Nairobi.
The economy was one of the biggest issues for voters in this year's U.S. presidential election. As they await Donald Trump's return to power, many Americans say they expect improving the economy will be one of his first priorities. VOA correspondent Scott Stans has our story.
Donald Trump's campaign focus on the economy carried through to his victory speech.
I will not rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve.
A majority of voters said the economy and jobs were the most important issues in this election, says pollster Ashley Kierzinger.
With so many voters focusing on the economy, AP Vocast finds that the share of voters who say that their households' family finances are falling behind has increased from 4 years ago.
And on the economy, Kierzinger says, more people chose Trump. An overwhelming message from voters heard clearly on the losing side as well. Hakeem Jeffries leads Democrats in the House of Representatives.
They want us to focus on the issues that matter and to come together to solve problems for hardworking American taxpayers, beginning with lowering costs for everyday Americans struggling to live paycheck to paycheck.
In New Mexico, Judy Evans says she chose Trump because prices are too high.
Inflation has certainly affected me. My grocery bill has doubled in the last 2 years. Electricity and that sort of thing has gone up quite a bit.
In North Carolina, Aaron Anderson admires Trump's record on the economy.
Trump, he's going to get it fixed for us. It was running good when he was in here before, and get it back on track again.
Voter Charles Boudreau expects fast action from the new administration.
They'll have less regulations. They'll be spending more in their particular areas. People that'll have more money will spend more money in their particular areas. Gas prices will go down.
U.S. consumers may not see such quick change, says finance professor Michael Weber.
At the end of the day, a president in the short run, independent of who is in the White House, has very little grasp on economic policy in the very short run, but also in specifically on grocery prices, the prices at the shelf we face in our daily lives.
Trump's economic plans include more oil drilling, lower taxes, and import tariffs, which most economists believe will result in higher prices for American consumers. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday, December 16, 2024. We now leave you with Mawa, also known as Mona Minga, with the song Junubia.
Yeah.
for real. Every day she let me know she's never gonna let me go. She just told me, boy, I love you. I don't wanna spend another day without you. For better, good, rise or fall. Every day she want me some more. The best thing ever happened to me. Better than anything before. Kalamal Gali, you my girl. Makes me feel like I own the world. Shukuru rabuna uwajibula na bini yare. Kuli ya marabi shukuru rabuna uwalimu arama bini yare. Bini ya meski ugiafa.
We have been listening to Mawa, also known as Mwana Minga, and the song Junubia. This one goes to our listeners in Gudeli residential area. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Brody, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to be with us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Armed groups continue to destabilize Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC. That's why the United States urges Congolese authorities to leverage all tools, including the United Nations peacekeeping force in the Democratic Republic of Congo, or MINUSCO, to protect their people and their country's territorial integrity, said U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield. Right now, MINUSCO remains well-positioned to do what peacekeeping missions do best, create space for peace processes and protect civilians in the meantime, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
Over the next year, the mission will continue to play an important role supporting the Luanda process, including the now operational reinforced ad hoc verification mechanism and diplomatic talks between Rwanda and the DRC, both enabled by Angola's strong leadership.
We urge all parties to honor the ceasefire and direct their aligned armed groups to do the same, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. The March 23 Movement, or M23, is a Congolese rebel military group. Based in eastern areas of the DRC, M23 has recently violated the ceasefire agreement. This must stop, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
Rwanda and the DRC agreed on what is required. The DRC must take action against the FDLR and cease its support to that group. Rwanda must withdraw its more than 4,000 troops from DRC territory and cease its support for M23. In addition, MINUSCO must be allowed to implement its mandate.
Ambassador Thomas Greenfield called on Rwanda to immediately remove its surface-to-air missile systems from North Kivu and cease GPS signal interference, which have effectively grounded MINUSCO air operations. Moreover, MINUSCO personnel must be able to operate without threats from M23, which limit the mission's movement, troop rotations, and resupply. While MINUSCO continues its essential operations, including life-saving efforts to protect civilians in Ituri, the mission must also continue on the path toward a sustainable and responsible withdrawal, urged Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
We commend MINUSCO and the DRC government for their work to revise withdrawal planning so that it better reflects conditions on the ground, especially with regard to risks to civilians.
The progress made toward peace through the Luanda process, supported by MONUSCO, presents an opportunity to end this crisis once and for all, and the widespread suffering it has caused.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.